way. But I wanted to get one thing. I've got a little lead in on this, and so I don't want to run it. But one thing I have been so indebted to you for, and I've been curious too about your, again, sort of foresightedness. And when I'm full-time teaching, well, even now I'm teaching half-time, but I'm teaching the course on Black history. And Mr. Smiley's work over the years in building up that Black history collection in the library and all the microfilms and the microfiches, it's really impressive. When I started teaching, I guess it was in 72, I was so impressed at the material that Mr. Smiley had been
the early on material that,
yeah, he had been collecting over the
well,
years,
I guess
obviously.
You would say that I'm a collector at heart. Mm-hmm. Running the library per se is boring to me, but collecting the material is a challenge. And of course
but you see, he had a basis for the medical school library before there was ever a whisper.
Well, I said he probably has this in a lot
the medical
of things,
journals. Yeah.
But because of one that I
yeah,
was
in
so involved
in. There are several fields, particularly medicine, music, and of course Black history.
And that was before,
anybody else was doing it.
Yeah,
before anybody else was doing it. And we got a lot of stuff that you get.
This is true, and it's sort of seasonal, the way at times you can get it, and it's getting hard again, but you have a lot of things over there that were during the period that people were not collecting, and then...
not especially, there was a voice crying in the wilderness, the few people that were doing it.
And it made it a very remarkable collection. That's one of the things I've been told.
Film and microfilm and that collection material is not a better collection in this country than that.
I know.
I know pretty well what's all around. Mm-hmm.
See, he spent a summer out in...
that collection...
On a tour. Well, what were we collecting the summer when we went out?
One of the early... Of course, I got interested in microfilming in the mid-30s.
Just when they were beginning.
When it was a very new thing. And
he started the microfilm collection.
I started the microfilm collection at Chapel Hill. They bought a camera for me. And I was doing
it. Is this when you were in graduate school or later?
I was in graduate school and working in the library. And
he was a documents librarian on the library.
I started out using a little Argus camera making microfilm. We had it built on a rack that would focus it down here. I copied it from Dr. Johnson, who was a
Cecil Johnson.
He was English.
There was a Cecil that was
there. Cecil Johnson was English.
But anyway, he was using a Leica. Of course, he told me that you do it with the Argus too. I mean, in fact, he said, I just happen to have this license. And of course, he had been to the British Museum and all that making, and this was before there was any commercial camera on the market. And Palmer Graphics, Eastman came out with that Palmer Graphics copy camera at the University of Baltimore and sent me on a trip to all the state capitals of the Confederacy. What we were trying to build up was a complete set of the legislative journal that session law for Jenkins, the professor of political science there at Chapel Hill. It was his project, and he got the money. And we went, and that's what she's talking about, I went to all the Southern state capitals, and wherever I could find legislative journals or session laws that we didn't have, including the University of Missouri. And,
fun summer. Did you have children then?
That was back in, I guess, what, 35 or 36. Took my little Chevrolet, two-door Chevrolet, and they paid me mileage and expense account. I took it over with me.
Towards the south.
Towards the south.
And then he came back to his library, and of course, see, he was just supervised when we were married, mm-hmm. but he came back to the library. And that was his interest, you know, he built up that document.
How old were you all after he was finished? He was full time at Chapel Hill, full time.
We got married. When we got married, he was still there supervised, I guess, you know what I mean?
Because we were married in 32. Graduate school. I was in depression because I graduated. I entered the first class of library school. But you see, I was just working. I was working full time and just taking two courses, two thirds below.
He worked 48 hours a week in the library, took graduate course.
I kept you.
All the time we were playing.
Kept him straight.
48 hours, honey, was a little bit.
Well, before we were married, that's
before we were married, I did, yeah, because that was before I was on the salary. That was when I was just working by the hour. I'd work many times, 48 to 60 hours a week, working for somebody else just to get paid extra for it. But when we were married, I didn't put on the salary. I was working 35 hours.
And Dr. L.R. Wilson was librarian. And he's still there?
He died.
Just listening. His, I was interested to find out that his wife was Dr. Wright's sister.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
We stayed down at Atlantic Beach, you know, in the old Seashore Club, the Dr. Wright and the Franks. And the ML Wright and all of them. Carl Pace, all the first.
The early people. I had heard about that.
And when Mrs. Wright was still alive, she still had her share in it. Her children were way off somewhere. She came and did out all her stuff, and she gave us two big iron griddles. So we still have that griddle.
Got his golf club.
You did?
I had left hand golf club.
Was Dr. Wright left-handed?
He played golf left-handed. Now, I'm not left-handed, but I play golf. I'm right-handed, uh-huh. but I play golf left-handed.
Is that because you got left-handed gloves?
Well, she knew that I played golf uh-huh. left-handed, so she gave me his.
Probably Dr. Wright and Wendell both, when they were little, would have been left-handed, but they made you be right-handed.
Oh, yeah. Then you couldn't.
They ended up being ambidextrous.
Yeah, then you couldn't be left-handed and right-handed. There was another thing I wanted to ask you. I know that some of Miss Mamie Jenkins' papers that we have a collection came from by way of you, wasn't it? Or
well, I don't know that I had much to do with it. You see, I worked with Miss Mamie in keeping her stuff off.
Oh, the stored.
Stored. In other words, all in those stuff had, why I kept them stored around the car somewhere in the library. And only in that respect, just as a custodian from, and then when she went over to Tennessee somewhere, she took most of that stuff with her. Now, how it ever got back to Donald,
well, I had the impression that there's was some more somewhere, and that's what I was
surprised if there is.
Was when I was asking about Miss Mamie Jenkins' papers. Don had said, when I was asking Don, he said somebody from down at Bayview.
Well, Miss Mamie had a cottage down at Bayview.
Had
that's how we got out of the river. We were visiting that Miss Mamie's cottage.
And was she down right near?
In her cottage,
was
at
Bayview,
and we're 2 miles below Bayview, 4 miles
below Bayview. Well, apparently somebody, maybe who bought her cottage or something, turned in some of those papers.
That's right.
There.
Now, well, I am.
Miss Emma Hooper had a lot of
stuff. Responsible for that box of stuff.
Uh huh.
This who runs that store there, Bayview, was a little. This Bath merchant bought her cottage, and he contacted me and had a box of letters.
Yeah.
And I told him that I wanted them, and I think he called me my telephone or something. Mm-hmm. And of course, I went and got them and took them to Donnelly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I heard, and so I was.
But that's just.
But Miss Emma Hooper, I'm sure.
That's just a very minor part of what her papers must be. So.
So she planned to write that year. She was always.
I know it. She was. She wrote that. It's about a 100-page book on Dr. Wright. And I saw in her notes that some of the papers that I've been looking at, and it says in there that she had enough to write a full biography of Dr. Wright. And that's what I was wondering.
Well, now,
she had enough information that she had collected, and that's what I was.
Have you run into anything?
Miss Grigsby or Louise Williams don't have any idea who anything is. Lois Grigsby and Lucia Williams.
Dead,
yeah, but I thought Louise Williams might have known.
I think they lost contact with her before the end. Now I heard, I don't know what to do, that I would say in the middle 60s, before Miss Mamie Jenkins died, that she had a manuscript that she wanted Leo to publish. And he said it was just trash. And I say I couldn't prove that, and I'm not sure where I got
from.
But you haven't run
into
anything in the way.
No.
It was sheer memorabilia, I'm sure, just bits and pieces, fragments, because she was not an organized
person.
She
was a very
collection.
Yes, that's right.
Apparently.
But that's the stuff is the stuff out of which you
a lot of it's trivia, but then it is something that
now,
you can get.
If you can find what she had, ask Leo about it.
Oh, I will. I have.
Ask him about any manuscript that she had. You can just tell him that you'd heard that he wouldn't publish it, that he thought it was trivia or trash, and whether.
She Leo still has a marine mentality.
If I'm not mistaken,
if it ain't factual, there's nothing to it.
He quoted that to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I could be wrong. I mean, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I know I'd heard his a similar reaction he had to what Miss Hooper had been working with. But I think he likes, real short, to the point.
Factual.
Yeah.
That's right.
But now that we're developing an archive, which they have approved, it all goes through everything, and to begin collecting a lot of people's papers.
And if there were just.
You got any papers you want stolen?
And when all that potpourri, Pitt County potpourri that he did, he got together. That's all that is about Pitt County. Of course, I'm sure Leo thought that was trash, but it was. This man who was in the grounds department here, Wendell thought had to, and he went around and just dug out these old stories, and Wendell thought they were fascinating, but I don't think Pitts ever thought the amount of hill of beans, and the same thing with the Ku Klux Klan stuff that he collected and all that. He just fascinated with that stuff, but I don't think Leo would be a bit of a.
A Ku Klux Klan
book that Wendell stuff that he got together too. It was bound That was when nobody was interested.
Yeah, is that here locally?
Well, it does have some stuff in it. I just clipped
whatever you
everything
find.
That
mm-hmm.
appeared about the plan in the Daily Press, normal papers, all of it. To an activity that you could plan in North Carolina.
Well, that's a very important type of material that if someone wanted to do it, that's where you'd start and work from.
And he sold a lot of those Pitt Potpourri and the Ku Klux Klan thing too. Although, of course, everybody's totally unsympathetic, but this was before the Ku Klux Klan in the years before this present revival of it.
Yeah.
Well,
because we thought it was so pathetic and regrettable that it was being maintained that way, and that's how he got interested, and then he started looking. But we talked about Leo, bless his heart, and he is a wonderful person.
In fact,
Wendell said one time when somebody was criticizing, Wendell said, now look, he said, I tell you one thing about Leo, he said, when you go to him, if he gets off, he's just all for whatever project he's on, just go hit it 100%. But he said, if you have misgivings about it, if you think he's wrong, and you go see him and you can convince him, He says he will grab the ball and run in the other direction just as hard. He'll reverse his field and go the other way if you can convince him, but he'll listen to you. And he said that not everybody can do
this, that. This is one of, I think, one of the secrets of his success.
Yeah,
right. It's been that open mind that...
you know, when they were talking about him running for governor, and he asked Wendell one day, Wendell was over that time, he said, "Father, what do you think of your name? What do you think about my chances with this run for governor?" Wendell said, "Leo, you asked me and I'm going to tell you." It'd be a cold day in hell when the New Jersey Yankees get selected governor of North Carolina, if you want to know what I think. I said, "I'm not saying you haven't done a marvelous job. You've gotten your name as a household word in a lot of places where I never thought." But he said, "There's no more chance for New Jersey Yankees elected governor of North Carolina." He said, "Now, if you want to know, that's what I think." And he said,
Yeah.
When he says there's a lot of change and liberation around, I said, that's just one of those things.
But
he did, of course. Yeah. That was out of the question with living in the position she was on. I think he knew all kinds of just played the
idea.
I think
he got a lot of mileage out of it, though. He didn't run, then sometimes people felt, he let them feel indebted. That he didn't run,
yeah, right.
And removed his
accomplishment, something that way. No, he's shrewd. He's shrewd, but he never had any of the lovable qualities that Dr. Messick had. Dr. Messick
was a warm,
person. And Leo, you never forgot the Marines. Although he's wonderful, as far as we're concerned, we got along fine with him, and I felt desperately sorry for living. Because she was lashed to the chariot wheel of his ambition. She was a nice, sweet little German housefrau when she came in. They lived in Brook Green. And you go there at 2 o'clock Sunday afternoon, and Leo was baking apple pies. And they were the happiest people you've ever seen. And he just, he had to be doing something. And he would just, and we'd have hot apple pie and great coffee, and it was just great. And he was happy as lost. And when he got present, from then on, she didn't like crowds, she didn't like people.
And she had to be a full-time entertainer.
Oh, my God. It was totally
catering, all that.
Totally foreigner, and she was not, and she'd been brought up since self-sufficient, German-type atmosphere. She had no more idea how to direct help, how to just get, other than just calling the caterer and telling him to take it over. She had no idea. And he had no patience. She was supposed to be able to take it.
I think she was casual to you.
Oh, she was definitely casual. Because she was a wonderful, very intelligent woman.
I've come upon pictures in the South. And when she was in her 40s at the prime and had these little children,
young children,
the happiest.
She was.
Wonderful person.
So she was last to the carriage wheel of his ambition, if anybody ever was, and that was the problem, was her problem.
Of course, Leo is one of the most ambitious men, I guess, you ever ran into. Of course, you know, at one time he talked about running for governor.
I just told her that she said it'd be a cold day in hell when the New Jersey Yankees got elected, but she said, but he got a lot of mileage out of not running.
Got mileage out of it.
And not running, and made people of obligation.
Just as a threat, he got.
This is absurd. Do we have a copy, I guess, in the library?
Oh, there should be 3 or 4 copies.
I just hadn't come upon.
Well, it's not a subject anybody's
interested in. Well,
he's a curious person.
I think it's a. My class in the Black History, very interesting.
Well, this is a part of Black history. That's why I was interested in it.
It is indeed.
This is a part of your Black history.
We'll take that to you.
That's why
I knew you wanted to have it, yeah. Because if it would be.
Oh, I could, Mark.
I'll give you those 2 copies. I'll make your friends.
Would you write your name in them? Mighty. Thoughtful, that is very valuable. Yes, I have read through this when I started working on this. I
really have to do a lot of plowing, you know, even in county history into,
well, this was just put together under rather difficult circumstances at times.
This one of your many different interests, but is this one of pockets of it? I'm sure there are many others in Black history, but I have, in working with this, I have, oh, just almost every week when I was totally immersed in it. Now I continue to teach it, and it's part I'm teaching half time now, but and I have been so indebted to you, and I have often wanted to have a chance to thank you for the work you have put into that, and the students are so impressed when I send them over there, and they find all these things that they do. So, well, they didn't know existed, and then as I point out that we do have one of the finest collections, I think, anywhere.
Well, other than probably one or two of the Black institutions that have been doing it for years, and outside the Library of Congress, I don't know. I suppose most of that material is available in the Library of Congress if you get to it.
Yeah, if you get to it. But there are very few things that I reference or that I come upon references to various books that we don't have. Either in microfilm or in stacks, and it's really, it would have been a very difficult collection to build up in the early 70s to start.
Well, most of it was really built up in the 50s and early 60s. So it's, but as I say, that really was my chief interest as far as libraries. Or somebody else can run it as far as I'm concerned. It nails screws of a library don't stick to it or speak.
The collection.
Building the collection. And I think that microfilm collection over there is outstanding.
It is.
I've heard people, or had people tell me it is, and what it is. Now, of course, one of the early projects that I did when I came to East Carolina, one of the first projects I started collecting was to build up everything that is indexed in the Essay and General Literature Index. And then through the years, as indexes like that came out, well, I immediately got on trying to get everything in it. And that's one of the few libraries in the country that has as complete information that you can find in any place. Of course, I don't know how well it's been kept up since I retired. I hope it has, because it comes out annually.
Yeah.
But I started within a year or two after I got here. I jumped on that SN General Literature Index and got a list of books that we didn't have, and circulated them all to book dealers throughout the country.
Now that's where you got
them.
Well, that is a blessing. Now that things are so expensive, we're really hurting.
Well, the thing about it is, lots of this, even when 30 years ago, a lot of it was still not available. Even 30 years ago, the only way you get it would be a microfilm collection.
And it's they're going more to, well, they're having to go more to microfilm.
Are you familiar with what Time Life is doing? Of course, you're not in Civil War, but it's associated with Civil War. Is this thing that Time Life doing? Time Life book. they're putting out reprints of books that were published 50, 60 years ago. This one is Porter on the one of the Civil War.
Check in the library and see. I bet.
Well, I don't know. They may have the opposite of the original edition of it over there.
Uh-huh.
But it's gotten to the point where you cannot find it.
Get the. Original.
But they're coming out. They're leather bound. They're going to be a whole series of them. And I can't remember what general it is. If I can get it on that telephone. we just got it a week or two ago. It just came and they cost about $21 or $22.
Mm-hmm. Kind of an elegant binding.
It's an elegant binding. I thought the book was right here, but I don't find it. It's going to be a whole series of books dealing with the Civil War and immediately thereafter. And this one was originally published in 1897. And all it is just a reproduction of the book.
Just a regular.
In other words, they found a good copy and have reproduced it. But the thing's been bringing $100.
As a rare book.
Find a rare book, it was $100. Mm-hmm. And that kind of thing, so much of it, is just out of reason for most library budgets now.
Yeah. This is hurting us so much, and of course the periodicals, the reason.
Oh, they're going worse, that's right.
Worse. Yeah. But they're cutting us back and back and back. Of course, we in the history are hollering with that. Well, I have